From Miami Law, I'm Annette Uguez, and this is The Explainer.
It is part of a trend in some states to do either of two things. The state government just out and out requires local jurisdictions to arrest people for sleeping on the sidewalks, obstructing the sidewalks, being in the park after hours, all those kinds of offenses. Or this kind of indirect, you know, let's put pressure on cities and county governments by making them subject to suit if they allow it.
Mm-hmm. Welcome back to the Miami Law Explainer, the legal affairs podcast where Miami law experts lend context and historical relevance to today's headlines. Laws criminalizing homelessness are taking effect across the U.S., and the fight has even gone to the U.S. Supreme Court. Stephen Tnamely, who has been at the forefront for decades, looks at the landscape. Let's go to executive producer Catherine Skip with the interview.
Morning, Steve.
Good morning, Catherine. Good to see you.
Thanks for joining us.
Glad to be here.
Good. So thank you. Let's start in Florida, where the governor recently signed legislation prohibiting cities and counties from allowing sleeping and camping on public property. So what are the problems with the law and will it stand?
Well, those are two big questions. Let's go over the law first. It's called HB 1365. That's just the House bill number. And it essentially says that municipalities, city governments, county governments cannot permit people to camp in public spaces. Camping is then defined in the ordinance, and it can mean that you have a tent or you're sleeping with a sleeping bag, bedroll, and so on. But it also can just mean you're sleeping in public spaces. So they're not supposed to permit that to happen. If they do, then starting January 1st, 2025, they'll be subject to lawsuits. And pretty much as the bill is written, anybody could bring the lawsuit. You can imagine businesses or neighbors who are upset seeing an encampment bringing it. And what they can seek is injunctive relief to require the cities or county governments to stop permitting it. The kicker in that is that the attorney's fees and other costs of the lawsuit, if the municipality loses, will have to be borne by the municipality. So it's not quite what has happened in some states of so-called nuisance, public nuisance lawsuits, where perhaps maybe there might be some damages that would depend on the state law of public nuisance. But that's still a pretty big incentive for city and county governments to worry about, well, what if there are people sleeping on the streets? Now, what are they supposed to do? And what is the relief that a state court could give? And this is where it gets a little complicated, because could they start arresting people for violating ordinances that are that people who are there sleeping in public will typically be violating? That might be an anti-camping ordinance. The city of Miami has one, although in theory it's currently its enforcement is suspended. But it could also be about obstructing the sidewalk, or it could be about being in the park after hours. There are plenty of ways to arrest people who are homeless, unfortunately, and are sleeping in public. So, but that, I think, violate certainly the local Pottinger decision, the decision in Miami that's still on the books, even though the consent decree under it was terminated, that says that you can't arrest people for carrying on really life-sustaining conduct in public spaces, such as sleeping or resting, if they're involuntarily homeless. And the way that's been defined, certainly in Pottinger, but then also in this Ninth Circuit set of decisions, Martin v. City of Boise and Johnson v. City of Grants Pass, the way that's been really implemented is you're involuntarily homeless if there are more people in the jurisdiction than there are spaces in homeless shelters. Mm-hmm. And certainly in Miami-Dade County, for example, there's something on the order of maybe 3,700 people by official counts who are homeless throughout all of Miami-Dade County. And then there's only about 2,600 shelter beds. So there's 1,000, 1,100 people, something like that, who literally just have no place to go. So if you have a situation after January 1st, 2025, where people are sleeping in downtown Miami on sidewalks, underpasses, parks, and someone brings a lawsuit, well, the question would be, could the court order the cities to start enforcing those ordinances? Well, even though there's a Florida statute, I mean, the court can't violate the Constitution. And so you might think, well, what could it do? Of course, cities could do other things. They could provide adequate shelter, but that's expensive to build and to expand the shelter capacity, and that's very unlikely to happen, I think. Really, I can't imagine a state court issuing an injunction requiring a city to violate the Constitution. Now, where, as I said, gets complicated is that there is a case pending before the Supreme Court. It's going to be argued April 22nd. It's Grants Pass v. City of Grants Pass v. Johnson. And that is the more recent Ninth Circuit case that held that it does violate the Eighth Amendment, which is a ban on cruel and unusual punishment, to arrest people for sleeping in public when there aren't shelter spaces available to them. If the Supreme Court just overturns that and kind of erases the whole Eighth Amendment holding, then I think come January 1st, 2025, there will be lawsuits in various places like Miami and Fort Lauderdale, other cities, mostly cities, conceivably rural areas, but mostly cities, where then the city does get ordered. You have to clear these encampments, and cities will not, in fact, no city will have enough shelter space. So, well, what will happen, I think, is either that they will arrest people, and alternatively, they'll threaten to arrest them. People will just scatter and be less visible. And that is really what happens when you criminalize homelessness. I mean, it's very counterproductive because it, first of all, makes it harder for people who are homeless ultimately to find jobs, to get housing and the like, because arrest records are always a problem for that. And so it doesn't help in that. And then you're not really, you're not actually reducing the number of people who are homeless if you just arrest them and make them move to areas where fewer people in the public see them. And often the areas that are most visible are near services that people who are homeless may need. So services, it could be medical services. It could be labor pools. And because a lot of people, even when they're sleeping in public, still they want to work and they do work. You may not realize it just looking at someone that they're actually working. Mm-hmm. So, okay. But that's part of this HB 1365. Now, the other part of it is and it's a very badly drafted statute, I have to say. I have a whole lot of technical legal questions that I think the courts might puzzle over. But to simplify, it seems to say that, cities, it's almost written as if it's an exception to the ban on cities permitting people to sleep in public if they designate an area for an encampment. Mm-hmm. But in reality, I think the way it will work is that if a county, and this is another interesting feature, only a county can create a designated encampment, not a city under the bill, even though the bill says neither cities nor counties may permit sleeping.
Right.
But if a county designates an encampment, then, well, it can do that. Let's put it this way. Is it exempt then from being sued if it's designated an encampment? That's not so clear, because what if a county designated an area that is basically an open encampment where people who are homeless could stay and also didn't arrest people? I mean, is it the intent of who were elsewhere and sleeping on sidewalks? I don't think the legislature meant that to happen, but it's a little unclear. I think the courts will have to grapple with it. But I think the idea was that, well, if you don't want to, you know, arrest people for sleeping on the sidewalks, county, then create at your expense a designated encampment where people can sleep on public space. And then you have to have sanitation, like portable toilets, potable water, drinkable water. In other words, you have to have certain services available, security. You have to ban alcohol and drug use. It's kind of like, in a way, a shelter, except there's no structure.
Right.
And So that's the idea. The state isn't helping with the funds, of course. It would have to be state inspected and certified. Now, you know, thinking about Miami-Dade County, I doubt the county would do this, but there's nothing to stop them from creating this encampment in Homestead, which is about 30 miles, I think, south of the city of Miami. It's not easily reachable by public transportation, but that would be fine with this bill. So what is this supposed to accomplish? And what it really does accomplish is it is the state telling cities, you need to arrest people who are sleeping in public, because it doesn't really offer any other solutions. And it is part of a trend in some states to do either of two things. The state government just out and out requires local jurisdictions to arrest people for sleeping on the sidewalks, obstructing the sidewalks, being in the park after hours, all those kinds of offenses. Or this kind of indirect, you know, let's put pressure on cities and county governments by making them subject to suit if they allow it. Mm-hmm. And I don't think, honestly, that the Florida legislature's provisions about, well, you can create this encampment with certain features is any more serious than City of Miami Commissioner Joe Carollo, who is quite notably very anti-homeless, unserious, anti-homeless, and so on. When an anti-encampment bill was before the city commission, and he was irritated that there are many people there protesting, saying it's not going to help to arrest people, he actually got the city to adopt a resolution for a program to adopt a homeless person. So if you're protesting this, if you're one of these protesters, the activist saying, do not criminalize homelessness, his response was, oh, well, then why don't you personally adopt, in his rather condescending term, a homeless person and take care of them? It's not a serious solution. And that's, I think, the problem. But as I say, if the constitutional protections that Pottinger and the Ninth Circuit cases provide against arresting people for being homeless, in essence, are overturned, then I think it could have some serious repercussions.
But if it doesn't, then all of these Boise, Grants Pass, Miami Beach can't be enforced, correct?
In the absence of adequate shelter, yes.
Right.
Now, what you also see and what Miami Beach is doing is, I think, something pretty close to playing games. So they have recently passed ordinances providing for the arrest of people who are sleeping on the beach at night or just sleeping on public sidewalks. The ordinances say, the ordinances, again, are badly drafted. And the reason for that, I think, is that they took an ordinance from Orlando, which they claimed had been upheld against constitutional attack by the 11th Circuit. And they said, well, just use that text. Now, I think it's a misinterpretation of the 11th Circuit case. It didn't really uphold it. Leave that aside.
Okay.
They also took the text of the ordinance, but then language from a kind of a handbook for the police about how to enforce it. And that kind of handbook language, I can be very helpful to anyone trying to, official police or otherwise trying to enforce the law, but it doesn't make good statutory language. So that's another one that's a little hard to parse, but it does at the end sentence in one key section say no one should be arrested unless they are offered immediately available shelter. So what the police have been doing is they go, let's say, out to the beach at night, and they'll just ask in a very general way, you know, after waking someone up at midnight, would you like assistance in finding housing or shelter, or would you like services? And a lot of people will, to that, especially a police officer who's just woken up, will say, no, I just go away.
Flashlight in your face.
Right. And so they're like, no. And then the police take that as a refusal of shelter because, in fact, the city of Miami Beach may have 3 shelter beds that night. Mm-hmm. But what they aren't doing is what was required under the Pottinger consent decree, which is to say, okay, if you approach them only with a warning for violating something like obstructing the sidewalk, being in the park after hours, there's not a problem of beaches for the most part in the city of Miami, but you approach them if there's an actually available shelter bed, and then you tell them, you're, let's say, in the park after hours. That's a violation of the city ordinances. We do have a shelter bed. If you take that, now, then we won't arrest you. But if you refuse it, we can arrest you. That puts the choice clearly. Miami Beach is not actually doing that. Mm-hmm. So they're being vague about it. And then people will just say no. And then they treat that as though they've turned shelter down. Those three shelter beds that kind of, they stretch it out. It's over, you know, many arrests, like 20 arrests a night. And mm-hmm. they've never actually offered it to someone, as best I can determine. Uh-huh. But I also think it's probably not the most likely scenario, just to talk for a moment about Grants Pass and, well, what is the Supreme Court going to do? This, I think it's unlikely that the Supreme Court is simply going to uphold the Ninth Circuit decision. And there's really more of a question of how sweeping will their ruling be? Mm-hmm. Will it leave anything standing? Will it be narrowly confined to the facts? The theory in Martin v. City of Boise and Grants Pass and Pottinger is, again, that you can't arrest someone under the Eighth Amendment for an involuntary status. Mm-hmm. That stems from a case, Robinson v. California, going back to the around 1960, that in which there was a challenge to a California statute that made it illegal to be an addict, not to use drugs, but to be an addict. By analogy, and also drawing on a subsequent case involving someone who was arrested for public drunkenness, mm-hmm. You could say the status of homelessness is involuntary. And then if you are sleeping in public, because that's a biological need, the conduct is involuntary. I think, I mean, one route would be for the court to adopt a very formalistic status conduct distinction. I mean, the California statute in Robinson v. California, it just said to be an addict. So I think they could say that's what a status is. If there were a statute that said it's illegal to be homeless, then yeah, we'd strike that down under the Eighth Amendment. But for anything else, it's conduct. And mm-hmm. the California Supreme Court several decades ago drew that kind of distinction. That would really eviscerate all these holdings. They could say that the question of involuntariness of homelessness must be determined case by case, because, you know, there's a whole kind of trope, I would say, myth that large numbers of people who are homeless are service resistant. They're determined to stay on the streets. That's where they want to live. That's really not the case for most people. You don't just look to, are there enough shelter beds potentially to cover everybody? Instead, you had to make an individual case by case determination. It would pretty much, I think, limit the Eighth Amendment defense to when someone is arrested. Mm-hmm. And then hopefully they have a public defender who will say, well, my client for these specific reasons is involuntarily homeless. But that's going to be very hard. I mean, because you'll still get the arrests, and that's huge strain on public defender resources. And I think the only other thing that the court could say is that the Eighth Amendment allows municipalities to do something less than ban public sleeping everywhere in the city. Mm-hmm. And then you'd have to see, well, then how tight can those bans be? I think the problem with that is, though, that's not really posed by the lower court case. So mm-hmm. they'd be really reaching beyond.
Right. So Grants Pass, you know, never wanted to let those homeless people just loll about. So now they're like pushing this new ordinance. But you were talking about that earlier, where they're saying that charitable organizations can't feed the homeless or needle exchange or give them clothes or anything unless they're registered with the county or the city.
Yeah, well, there's nothing new about that in one sense, in that a lot of cities have tried mostly to focus on food sharing. You know, whether religious or nonprofit groups want to just go out and help feed people who are homeless. And then you either get a ban on it or some kind of permit requirement. And that's what Grants Pass was doing here, except it also applied to providing clothing. And then there's the whole question of just trying to reduce the spread of HIV by giving people who are addicted clean needles. Now, mm-hmm. it would also be good to have vast expansions of drug treatment programs, because a lot of people who are addicted on the streets or not just can't get into drug treatment programs, right. But leave that aside. So what Grants Pass did was typical, just said you have to have a permit, but it was fairly burdensome because then twice a year you had to file this very big bureaucratic report. And so the city council passed it. The mayor said, no, I'm vetoing it. This just doesn't really accomplish anything. And it's another layer of bureaucracy. The city council was unable to override that veto. Mm-hmm. So that hasn't gone into, but right. into effect, but it had, the city of Miami has a food sharing ordinance that prohibits it everywhere, every single place in the city, except for three or four parking lots in downtown Miami. There's plenty of people who are homeless throughout the rest of the city, and you have to get a permit. I think a lot of providers have responded to that by just zipping in quickly, handing out food and leaving, right. hoping that police just won't see them.
Yeah.
But that's a very typical kind of thing. And the theory is you're enabling people, you're encouraging them to live on the streets by providing food. There also sometimes is this notion of litter. But in fact, I mean, most organizations, especially if they can kind of set up shop and then without being rushed, hand out food and people can eat it there, they clean up after.
Right.
Now, if you give people, if they have to just drop off a little styrofoam box with sandwich and potato chips,
right.
then the cities, including Miami, don't provide enough trash cans. Mm-hmm. And then that, in that sense, it may generate
litter. Disney World, every 28 steps, there's a trash can.
Yes. And that's not
downtown Miami.
That is not the city of Miami's approach. Now, one last thing I think also just to mention is that there's a lot of encampment cleanups, quote unquote, which can mean many different things. It can mean just trying to collect trash, power wash the streets and so on, which is fine. It can mean going through and just kind of throwing away everything, including homeless people's property. Mm-hmm. And it can even mean cleaning up, meaning just dispersing people who are living there and saying, don't you come back here. And then there's no encampment there. I do worry about HB 1365 and the recent settlement of a lawsuit against the city of Miami, the Cooper Levy v. City of Miami, that has resulted in, I think, much strengthened protections against throwing away people's belongings, mm-hmm. things like medicine and personal, irreplaceable personal items, clothes, identification cards. I think it's strengthened that, you know, the city had to pay damages to the individuals who had property, like even their work uniforms, their urn with their mother's ashes, mm-hmm. and a pet cat was killed. I mean, they had to pay damages to mm-hmm. people. So I'm hoping the city of Miami may improve its procedures. But they're going to now be kind of subject to a sort of competing set of pressures from this HB 1365, because they'll be told you have to get rid of encampments. Mm-hmm. And so what are they going to do? Are they going to revert to the earlier kind of cleanup where you go in and just throw everything away? Mm-hmm. That would be in violation of what they've agreed to, but right. we'll have to see it. It just creates a pressure on them that actually they shouldn't have.
Mm-hmm. More shelter beds.
Well, the ultimate solution, I think, to problem of homelessness is more affordable housing. Mm-hmm. And there's a severe shortage of it. And I've said before, I think there's one excellent book by some Washington State academics and researchers that really shows that if you look at the statistics on the rate of homelessness mm-hmm. in different cities, it correlates perfectly with how expensive housing is. It doesn't correlate at all with things like weather. It doesn't correlate with rates of mental health or substance abuse. All the things that people will say are, in some sense, the many causes.
That contribute to
these. Yes, it doesn't correlate with absence of criminalization. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you think of the analogy I use, the musical chairs, game table, let's say 9 chairs, 10 people. Mm-hmm. It is true. And here they differentiate between a root cause and a precipitating factor. Now, maybe when the music stops, a person who is disabled is more likely to be out of a chair. Mm-hmm. But the solution is, well, why don't we have enough chairs? I mean, right. that's the same with affordable housing. That really is something that governments have both state and local neglected a lot. Now, Florida had one other bill, I could say, called the Live Local Act last year. They've passed some amendments. it's possible that that will result in some more affordable housing being built. It's a little too early to tell about the success of that. I doubt very much it will be enough, though. And ultimately, my own view is that in addition to just needing to increase rent subsidies, which is probably a federal, it's a, certainly a federal program now called Section 8 vouchers,
sure,
that needs to be expanded. Probably we need to go back to more to the model also of public housing. I mean, public housing can work if it's maintained, and that is a way of ensuring that you have affordable, decent apartments. There's no reason why they have to look any different from other apartment buildings,
right,
or that they have to be neglected. They were, I think, in some instances in the past, but just as the tragic collapse of the Champlain Towers, nobody said, well, that means the whole condominium model of housing doesn't work.
Right.
It means you have to do it right and
exactly,
keep things up.
Thank you for yet another depressing podcast.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad to be here and hopefully shed a little light on what's going on. And it will be interesting to see April 22nd. We'll get a hint of what the Supreme Court's going to do.
Great. Well, thanks for coming in.
Yeah, you're welcome.
All right. See you around.
Yeah.
Thanks for joining us for The Explainer and a whole new season of Explaining. If you enjoy our show, leave us a 5-star review with your podcast provider and ask your friends to subscribe. Our show is engineered and edited by Christopher Aldotti, with theme music composed by Rady Kim from the Frost School of Music. I'm your host, Annette Uguez. Today's show was brought to you by Miami Law's upcoming Towards Abolishing the Family Policing System. This convening will explore the frameworks and strategies for abolishing the child welfare system. Friday, April 19th, here at the Law School. For more information, visit www.law.miami.edu.